All right, so today we're going to be talking about what's in a wallet part two. That is, what does the community think is in a wallet? And heard last week from, I believe, 4 to 5 different people about what a wallet is, everything from technical architecture to what the branding denotes and what are the technical requirements. And today we're hearing from another set of folks. We're going to go through some IP notes. We're going to select a scribe, a few introductions, reintroductions, some general announcements, and updates on the action items. And then finally, we'll get to our roundtable for what's in a wallet. So without further ado, the IP note is anyone can participate in these calls, but all substantive contributors to any CCG work items have to be members of CCG with full IPR agreement signed. If you want to know how to do this, then it's in the agenda. The instructions are there. The minutes in an audio recording can be found on the W3C CCG GitHub. And we use IRC to queue speakers during the call as well as take minutes. So all attendees should type present and then character plus to get your name on the attendee list in the transcript. Type in IRC. And if you have something to say in IRC, type Q plus to add yourself to the queue with an optional reminder after the Q plus. If you're not on IRC, you can just ask to be put on the queue. And please keep your answers pretty short so that everyone has a lot of time to speak. There has been a lot of interest in the what's in the wallet discussions. So if we can get more perspectives, that's better. And lastly, the meeting is held by voice. And off-topic IRC comments are subject to deletion from the record. We just want to maintain a simple thread of conversation. So with that, I'm going to ask for any volunteers to scribe. Feel free to call on yourself here or an IRC, and we would appreciate that. Any volunteers to scribe? If not, in about 30 seconds, I will start going through the scribe list. Okay. I will start going through the scribe list. Jeff Orgel, are you here? Moses Ma, are you here? Troy Ronda, are you here? Gabe Cohen, are you here? Sumita Jonek, are you here? Ted Thibodeau, are you here? Ken Ebert, are you here? Heather Bessens, are you here?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah.
But I think I'm really listening more, but I'm happy to scribe today.
Yeah, Heather, you are a chair, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, actually, we didn't update the scribe list to remove the chairs, so that's my bet. I can do that right now.
Okay, great. So just continue to go down the list. Drummond Reed, are you here? Dave Longley, are you here?
Yep, I can scribe.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you. Okay, so moving on. So introductions and reintroductions. Is there anyone here who is new to the group and would like to introduce themselves? Please just speak up.
Daryl O'Donnell here. I was in the group a long time ago, but I'm back. Heather asked me to come and do a quick discussion on the digital wallet discussion.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Hi, so, Isaac Patkiff from. Oh, sorry. Can I? I'll just go.
I'm Isaac Patrick from Bloom. I was on the calls a while ago, hadn't listened in a while, but I wanted to join for the wallet discussion because we're going through kind of an overhaul of our digital wallet now. So I'm specifically listening for that.
Great. Great to meet you. Does anyone else want to give an introduction?
Phil,
hi, good morning. This is Tony Rose joining the call for the first time.
Phil Long from the T3 Innovation Network and ASU, and I've been participating in the other wallet discussions, but new to this group.
Great to meet you. Anyone else? Okay, we're going to move on to reintroductions. Would anyone like to reintroduce themselves?
I'd like to say hello. This is Daniel Hardman, and I just wanted to check to make sure my audio was working.
We can hear you crystal clear, Daniel. Thank you. Any other reintroductions? Okay, great. So announcements and reminders, it's still ongoing, and it's going to go until August 6th, I think. Let me think if there's something else. I believe that the DIF interoperability working group is kicking off tomorrow at 9. In those efforts. And that seems to be the end of announcements.
That would be 9 Eastern. So it's 6 a.m. Yep. For West Coast people.
Yes, thank you. 9 a.m. Eastern. Thank you. And we'll add that to the announcements section of the website right after this meeting. Great. So progress on action item. Go ahead.
So next Wednesday, the 21st of July, Kantara is going to have a webinar about UMA in healthcare, and I'll post the link to it in the chat, in the IRC.
Great. Thank you. Anyone else have an announcement? Please use the queue. Okay, thank you. So progress and action, I'll hand it over to Kim for this part.
Thank you. So it looks like we just have one today, and that is something tracking the merging of the VC issuer and verifier APIs. So that's issue here. This was discussed on a call a while back, and we're just now getting to it. There are work items that originally separately tracked two sets of APIs, the issuer verifier ones. These spun out of the SBIP interop project. There was support among the members, the owners of those work items, for merging these two items into a new repo. And so we're just following up on that. I emailed the description, and the description is also in the issue, but it's effectively we're going to create a new repo, combine the existing issuer verifier APIs into that. We have a new baseline spec to update the content to, so that will be the new basis for any subsequent discussion. So it's not saying that the work item is finished. It's just saying we have a new baseline that we want to do edits on. And then we'll just update the accounting on the CCG work items page to reflect one work item instead of two. So I think that this one seems very non-controversial, given that all the owners of it were supportive, and it seemed mostly a bookkeeping issue. But I did want to call that out, and I think we're planning to move forward to that today, unless there are any objections during this call. So add yourself to the queue if you do, and otherwise I think we can move forward with this.
Great. Thank you, Kim. So now we're moving on to the main roundtable for today, What's in a Wallet Part 2. And with that, I'm going to start with some consideration for communication. And this is sort of setting informal rules so we can have more effective communication instead of yelling past each other. We've collected some resources here. If you contribute to any W3C projects, it's likely that you accept the contributor agreement, which implies that you're going to follow the professional conduct and ethics policies of the W3C. And some relevant documents are there, along with those from the IETF and some other organizations. I'm just going to review some social rules. Again, there are no set consequences for violating any of these rules, but I think they're just things to keep in mind, because when we're in our heads with our own ideas, we don't think about how we make the other person feel. And even though these are logical and, you know, very technical discussions, typically they go a lot easier if everyone has a collaborative attitude instead of listening to tear someone down, but rather, you know, listen. So examples of these kinds of no-well actuallys, where you correct someone on a minor detail that doesn't really have anything to do with their main point, like, oh, I think that Linux is better than FreeBSD for server software, and someone saying, well, actually, it's GNU Linux, when that wasn't, relevant to the conversation. It just kind of surprises. Another example, if you say, oh, you didn't know about this thing, everyone knows about that thing, that serves no productive purpose in a conversation and is very alienating to people who are just trying to learn, and we don't encourage that. And no backseat driving. If two people are having a discussion about something, we don't have this problem so much here because we have a queuing system, but chiming in with the solution or what you think is the solution is not something that's recommended. And then lastly, no subtleisms, meaning you don't want to say something like, Windows is so easy to use that even mom can use it. Because many moms are actually very technology savvy and that along with ageism. So if you can just avoid clients, we're going to move on to talking about actually what's in a wallet. And then each speaker is going to have 5 minutes. We're going to wait till the end of the 5 minutes for everyone to start Q&A and discussion thereafter. And some of the speakers have sent materials to the mailing list, so maybe check your inbox for thread titled Agenda, W3C Credentials CG Call. And we will start with Kali Identity Woman Young. And Kali, are you there?
Yeah, hi Wayne.
Hey, yep, and you're recognized for 5 minutes.
Great.
And I will give you a minute.
So I sent both the links to Google Slide deck, and if you are not comfortable there, there is also the PDF. So this is primarily sharing the work that we did within the glossary group for the last several months, and to bring it back into this discussion about what a wallet is. We surveyed the community, as you can see on Slide two, both about what the terms wallet, agent, and credential meant, but also about the meaning in between them. We took the 27 responses and sorted them, and we found a bell curve of meaning, meaning that there was a range of different sort of meanings that people had in their definitions, but that some stuck out more than others. And for wallet specifically, the 12 of the definitions really highlighted that it was about key and secret storage. The next most frequently defined aspect of them was that they stored credentials. And finally, the next highest one was said that they were agent controlled, but there was a connection with an agent. So I've put in slide five our definition that we came up with from this, which is that wallets provide the storage of keys, credentials, and secrets, often facilitated or controlled by an agent. And these next slides, maybe the most important, was that the sort of the meaning that folks had in between the definition. So a wallet accepts or presents a credentials, and credentials are used to access a wallet. And then on the other edge of the triangle in between wallet and agents, that agents may have wallets. Wallets can be agents. Agents store credential keys and messages in a wallet. An agent lets you work with and connect to wallets. And that agents support delegations and agents back up wallets. And then finally, there's another edge that I won't go through between credential and agent. And I'll just conclude with this slide that wallets, you know, this definition that we came up with about what they are, and that feels good. So I'll give my time back.
Great. You had 2 minutes left to spare. Very impressive. Moving on to the next speaker, Ori Steele, recognized for 5 minutes.
Awesome. So my summary is going to be something. I'm going to talk a little bit about things that I've presented here in the Hyperledger Identity Group and the Hyperledger Aries calls. So, you know, we proposed this universal wallet spec work item a little while ago, and it attempts to describe what's in wallets. So that's kind of what the main thrust of my 5 minutes is going to be focused on, because we're trying to sort of organize what we see people storing in wallets today into a specification that links to the existing specifications that we've seen in the wild. So the W3C DID specification, the verifiable credentials specification, And we've seen, you know, within the Hyperledger community, you know, Hyperledger schemas, Hyperledger connections, unique pairwise identifiers for connecting between parties. And then, you know, critically, a lot of people, when they think about wallets, also think about payments and they think about currency, you know, either digital fiat currency, in the case of Google Pay, Apple Pay, Microsoft wallet things. Or cryptocurrency or token wallets in the case of MetaMask or, you know, Bitcoin wallets and that kind of thing. And so what we've tried to do with this universal wallet specification is basically describe the ways that people are using wallets to store currency, identity documents and material, and credentials. And you can think of it by analogy with what's in your physical wallet today. If you open up your wallet, you're going to find there's maybe like $1 or $2 or no dollars anymore in there, or, you know, depending on what country you're in, hard currency, fiat currency. There's going to be identity documents, identification cards, coupons, and in some cases there might be specific forms of credentials like, you know, health and healthcare coverage cards, things like that. And then there's probably also going to be some personal items, so pictures of your family, other things. And I learned this through, you know, conversation with SICPA. I don't know if anyone from SICPA is on the call, but they've done some really awesome work in this space. Hopefully at some point they'll be able to share, you know, on call in the future. But people store all kinds of sensitive information in their wallets that isn't like identity or currency or credential stuff. And so I think from a user experience standpoint, it's important to be aware of that. But the main point of this wallet specification is to unify the relationship between cryptographic keys and currency and credentials. So then one other thing I wanted to mention is on the previous wallet call, the tangent was mentioned, and we have a little blog post about our work with the Tangent cards, specifically their use for transferring cryptocurrency and issuing verifiable credentials from hardware-backed cards over NFC. And so when we talk about representations for key material in a wallet, it's important to note that sometimes that means the key material doesn't actually exist in the wallet. So in the case of Tangent, that provides a hardware isolated key interface that you can use to transfer currency or issue verifiable credentials. And yet there are ways of representing that key material in a way that's portable, where you can move that identifier for those keys from one wallet to the next, and yet still issue credentials using those physical cards. So by analogy, if you're familiar with the CAC cards or the PIV cards, they're sort of similar physical cards that go along that sometimes people store in their wallet. And you can move metadata about key material and credentials without necessarily needing to physically move the actual key material from one place to another. So another example of this are things like YubiKeys, other hardware isolated key mechanisms, and web-based key mechanisms like Azure Key Vault, Google or Amazon key management software. There's ways of representing keys that are not localized to a wallet, keys from one wallet provider to another. So the whole point of this wallet specification is just to describe what people in the community are doing, provide a set of data models where if you represent your wallet content in that data model, you will have wallet portability, and describe a set of interfaces that will allow for answering the question of, if I move from wallet vendor A to wallet vendor B, will I still be able to transfer my Ethereum currency? Will I be able to interact with those ERC-20 tokens? That kind of thing. So I've already given this presentation once before to this group and to the Hyperledger communities and to the DIF, so I'll yield back the remainder of my time if I have any.
Thank you, Ori. There was no more time. Appreciate you. Just wanted to say we're seeing a lot more demand for these calls than we have before. So the infrastructure is reaching kind of its breaches, but fear not, we're all working on a better solution for meeting infrastructure coming this summer. So not as exciting as your blockbuster, but since a lot of theaters aren't open, this might be the most exciting thing. So the floor will now recognize Daniel Hardman to give his take on what's in a wallet. And Daniel, we'd love to hear a brief introduction and what you think is in a wallet.
Thank you. I just sent into the IRC a link to the slides I'll be presenting from. I also emailed them. I have five slides. I hope I can get through them in 5 minutes. The basic message that I want to give is that I feel like wallet represent an interesting intersection of design tension, and I want to talk about what that means. Physical wallets are a general purpose container. We can't put anything we feel like in a physical wallet, although we can put a variety of things in it. You know, you can put a key in a wallet, a physical key I'm talking about. Putting lots of them in doesn't work great. You can put money and so forth. But we wouldn't expect a wallet to contain all of our assets. We wouldn't necessarily expect it to contain our transaction history or our bank accounts. And yet it's not uncommon for us to see wallets that are stuffed. And I think the reason why is because wallets are super convenient, and putting things into physical wallets is tempting, right? It's just one more thing. And I'm not here to take a super strong position. Rather, I'm here to admit the fuzziness, I think. My second slide here, it's actually slide 3 in my deck, talks about different types of data. And there's two graphics on this slide. One is a continuum of sensitivity. And I've marked, and this is kind of old, actually, my opinions about the sensitivity of certain kinds of data have changed over time. But the point is that there's different kinds of data that have different degrees of sensitivity to them. And the stakes for, you know, exposing the data is different. And then the other graphic is about data size and data richness. And here you have two axes. So this is a two-dimensional view. And what I'm claiming is that there's data that is highly rich, and also very large. An example of that would be a genome. That's kind of the extreme example there. And then there's also on the other extreme, there's data that's super small and also not very rich, which would be like an individual cryptographic key. And there's things all over that two-dimensional space that are more or less rich and more or less large. And then the same slide also has a list of 14 different types of data that are related to SSI that I have in brainstorming thrown and they stuck to the wall. There's more than 14, obviously, but these are all interesting as test cases. Would we put this in a wallet or not? Some of them are pretty obvious, like I think payment keys to agree with Ori and encryption and signing keys. Some are a little bit more interesting, like would we put a biometric template in a wallet? I don't know. What about presentations that we receive from other people of credentials? Would those go in a wallet? I don't know. Things that probably don't go in a wallet, in my opinion, near the bottom of the list, things like health records. But, you know, it's still debatable. My next slide is making the point that there's an interesting dynamic with wallets and remoteness. You can remote some secrets, but you can't remote all your secrets because however you remote your secrets, you must have a secret that unlocks the remoteness. And so it's important to recognize that one of the fundamental characteristics of a wallet generally is that it's local. Now, I don't mean local in the kind of naive sense. You could have a wallet that's stored in a database that is actually, you know, off of the current machine. What I mean by local is just it feels like you can directly access it without extra work. Next slide. Some other observations about wallets that feel important to me. A wallet is not just a mobile app. There could be enterprise wallets. There could be paper versions of wallets. A wallet is definitely a locus of control in the DID controller sense. Now, there's a complicated relationship between DID control and wallets, but I'm just saying that there's an interesting nexus there. I think a wallet is a unit of backup and replication. And replication of wallets is interesting because if you follow the security best practice of never copying private keys to new devices, your replication algorithm is a little bit different. It's a unit of identity portability. I think sometimes wallets are envisioned to be subdivided by personas like work versus personal, and also sometimes by identities where you have if you're a parent, you have a wallet that represents yourself, but you may also have a wallet or a portion of your current wallet that represents the child that you are a guardian for. A wallet is certainly a hacking target, and we need to keep that in mind in our designs. And the last observation on this slide is that a wallet is not necessarily in a containment relationship with all of the data that it's associated with. That might seem like splitting hairs, but what I mean is it's also possible for a wallet to reference data that it doesn't actually contain in the most literal sense. And so thinking about what's in a wallet, the word in is worth parsing and thinking about. So
hey,
this
Daniel.
All leads me, yeah.
We are at time, but
oh, okay.
We would welcome follow-up comments after in the queue.
Oh, let me just say that my sixth slide is where I wanted to end up, so go look at it.
Thank you so much for your time, Daniel. We will now move to Darrow O'Donnell. You're recognized for 5 minutes. Please give an introduction and talk about what's in a wallet to you.
Perfect. So I'm going to be just Darrow O'Donnell here. I'm going to be talking about a report that we pushed out last year. It was created for two reasons. One, to address some concern of the ambiguity of what a wallet is, what is a digital wallet. but also to, so we produce two reports. One is the public report, which all is available via the deck, and I'll also put the PDF link here in the chat. But also is a business strategy report for three companies in Canada, a bank, a telco, and a security consultancy. The reason we created the overall, if you are looking at the deck on slide two, I'll just jump immediately to slide three, which is why a study, and the part of it was there was a lot of hand waving. I think we're recognizing now that the work is coming on, that digital wallet means a lot of different things to a lot of different people, and the IIW vibe in 2018 was, oh, the wallet will do that. There was a lot of way too much hand waving. So what we did was we went over about 300 reports and projects, attended and participated in IIW Rebooting Web of Trust, went into deep discussions, and we pushed out it's available in Creative Commons for the public report, and again, the private report went to industry members. And what it really covers is the following. It covers what are the capabilities of a wallet, and this is generally speaking from a user and or enterprise perspective, not a developer perspective, so it might bring a different lens. Also, some of the guiding principles behind what wallets should, if someone is developing a wallet app, what they should be considering about. What stuff do we put in a digital wallet? As well as some enterprise-specific concerns. There are differences when you're looking at it at a scale and or multi-organization, multi-person type of a wallet. Where agents fit in this term, what's a wallet, when we get into, it sounds like just a encrypted database to me versus the layman's term of a wallet, what's my app. It's a relatively simple application, but underneath, yes, there's a whole bunch of pieces moving around. We covered off the state of tech, and that was as of March 2019. I'd argue that there's quite a few areas where not a lot of progress has been made, other areas there have been. We also identified where further R&D is required, and that drove some investment by some of the participants. We identified immediately that in 2019, user experience is the biggest of the problem. Quick update on what we've learned since. I would say there's really a couple things. On the user experience side, the wallets that are in the wild and being used by non-techies, meaning the ones who are not talking about verifiable credentials, they're just using apps to do their work, are typically single credential, single connection type of applications. As you may know, I've been advising and been CTO for CU Ledger for some time. I'm stepping back into an advisory role. But our role there is to provide a credential and a connection that credit unions can talk to members on, really a single user, single connection, single credential. We don't need to be able to browse and look through and pick different attributes and proofs based on different attributes and different credentials. We need it as dead simple as possible on a user experience basis. The other key thing, and Daniel hit on it a little bit there, is that backup and recovery. In my deck, it says I see backup recovery is terrifying on a mere mortal basis. Backup recovery is an attack mechanism. It's an attack vector. It is a surprise to credit unions, for example, and banks that if I can back up and move my phone, they assume, well, hang on a sec, can I now operate on two phones? And what happens when my family member, which is a very common fraud vector, takes the backup of my phone, lights it up. I have no idea that they are now authenticating as me and doing banking on my behalf and ripping me off. The approaches on the backup recovery, I would argue, are very crypto and tech-centric, and they're only available to a very small niche, just a very small percentage of our audience. Last comment, if you want to get access to it, someone's already on that slide, I see. Just hit my website, hit me up on Twitter. And I'll put this exact link, and I'll put a direct link to the PDF as well into the chat. I'll warn you, the doc is almost 90 pages long. One of the participants, one of the funders behind it, there were four of us, asked me to write a summary. I told him the summary would cost about 3 to 4x what the main report, because it's really hard to cut the content out. That's it for me. I will yield the floor.
Daryl, thank you so much for your input. We're now moving on to Katrina Dow. You're recognized for 5 minutes. Please give a brief introduction and your answer to what's in a wallet. Katrina, if you're talking, we can't hear you. You might be muted.
Wayne, let me go back channel with her. She's only on audio, so let me track that.
Okay, so we will move over Katrina for now and on to Charles Cunningham. Charles, you're recognized for 5 minutes. Please give a brief intro to yourself and the answer to what's in the wallet.
Hi guys, my name is Charles Cunningham. I work for Yellowcom. We're an SSI company based in Berlin, Germany. I'm just gonna post the link to this. One second. I've just got some slides I'm gonna post in the IRC, if I can. Yeah, sorry. So we have looked extensively at Yellowcom at what goes in a wallet for some time. We offer a wallet as an app on the Android and iOS app stores, and we also have implemented wallet functionality for enterprise use cases, albeit slightly less sophisticated. And we just have some graphics here that just go over some simple graphics that explain what we think goes in a wallet. For example, metadata is one thing. Actually, I'll start with the simplest one, key material. Everyone knows key material is the foundation of all wallets. The simplest definition of a wallet is something that just manages your private keys. This is a fairly basic definition, but we found that while trying to keep a small definition for a wallet, it would continue to grow once you bring SSI into the mix. Just managing keys is fine for a cryptocurrency wallet, but with SSI, things get a lot more complicated. Obviously, credentials go right into a wallet, something you use every day. The analogy is right there with physical wallets. You pull your driver's license out of your wallet. So that one's pretty obvious. Capabilities is similar to credentials. They can be considered the same kind of signed data that you would present to verifiers to do particular things. The intent behind them is slightly different, so we've represented them separately. And in the UI for our wallets, we've actually also separated the representation. We found that the model of capabilities is easier to represent more as a ticket or an authorization, which of course it is, whereas credentials is more of a, you know, presenting some information about yourself sort of interaction. Yeah. So history and metadata are closely related and are also represented in our wallets. For example, upon being issued a credential, our issuance protocol defines a way for issuers to indicate how the credential should be displayed in the wallet. So that metadata is cached and used whenever you display the credential or whenever it's presented. Additionally, this metadata and the history includes all of your interactions with other identities and whatever metadata is related to each interaction, whether it's a pairwise identifier or the identifier for the credential that was exchanged, can be stored. And in a functional sense, so wallets can be defined as stores of information, but in the sense of a mobile wallet, often they're bundled with agent-like behavior, so simple ways to find or do actions with the data in your wallet. Obvious examples include presenting a credential to someone or participating in some kind of interaction. We've extended this functionality to include non-credential-based interactions, for example, remote procedure calls for cryptographic operations using the keys in your wallet. And we've been looking at ways where we can merge the user model of a wallet as a personal store of whatever information you might have with the enterprise view of a wallet, where it should be a secure store for all kinds of sensitive information. And we've been exploring this through basically a capabilities model for how a user or a, you know, individual identity might interact with a larger identity through capabilities that allow them to perform key operations using the other wallet. So there's various different relationships that need to be put there and in the metadata. Yeah. And the second graphic here is just a representation of our SDK, which we've used to, well, basically represent the wallet that we put out. It can be used for both, well, we use it for both mobile and server-side applications, and it just has a simple interfaces that need to be provided to give it the full functionality. Yeah, I guess that pretty much covers it. I guess I yield the rest of my time.
Great, Charles, thank you so much for that. And is it my understanding that Katrina is now here? Katrina, are you here?
Yeah, hi. Is it working this time?
Yes, I think it is working, and we will be upgrading the meeting infrastructure, so it will be easier soon,
yeah.
I should hope.
Really, really sorry about that. Well, I just left myself back.
Great. Well, welcome, and we welcome you to, We welcome you to give a brief introduction and the answer to the question, what's in the wallet?
Great. So, hi, my name is Katrina Dow, and I'm from Miko, founder of Miko. And I was on the call last week, which was super interesting, and also today, I think the diversity of answers and the technical perspectives are all incredibly valid and interesting. I'd like to just take a slightly different direction. Having started in this space almost just over a decade ago, focusing on sort of secure data storage and the whole idea of data and information that was important, not so much in everyday life, but important information that would build up over the course of life. And working backwards from that over the last couple of years is the idea of the verified credentials and wallet was building. I think it's really interesting the way that language begins to shape technology. And what I've seen, particularly from the evolution of our products and services, is that we've moved from something that that could secure just about everything that you could ever imagine you might want to save over the course of your life, to looking at how you would categorize that, to looking at how you may want to have a consent layer, to looking at how you may want to connect from an API point of view. And I think the really interesting thing from that evolution is how it brings it down to sort of the idea of portability, how things actually become really lightweight. And so part of the theme that I think that is emerging in listening to everyone is that the wallet is now turning up into this idea of portable, reusable. I think a really important part of this is the next wave of real digital transformation rather than digitization. So I think we've been through a decade or so of taking data and information into the digital world, but really what we've just been doing is digitizing forms. And I think one of the things that the wallet does is it starts to focus on things that are really critical and lightweight, the kinds of things that you may want with you in an everyday sense, that are really part of a digitally connected world, as opposed to something that is mirroring the physical world that's been digitized in some way. I think the other thing is that wallets allow, because of the lightweight nature, for ecosystems to develop really quickly without the need for tight integration with the credential issuer. So what happens is that obviously through the work that's been done through the standards group that many of us are part of, we're starting to see that this idea of interoperability and portability means that ecosystems can develop really, really quickly with the individual, the service provider, and some kind of trust anchor that can be universally recognized. Now, from our perspective, we still see that all of the things that we started to build some years ago are really important: data, documents, you know, estate planning, university transcripts, you know, health information. It's not that any of those things have disappeared, but those things become kind of more important anchor points back to give rich context around the things that are more lightweight and used every single day. And I think the interesting thing in terms of watching this language and evolution from data storage through to the connectivity from an integration point of view, now down to the use of the word wallet, is I think what happens is the wallet helps people give an understanding immediately to how that might fit into everyday life. And I think that is also important, which leads to some of the other work that we've been doing right now, is how do you bring this lightweight, decentralized, very human-centric solution also into the enterprise or the existing world. And we've been doing some really interesting work around OpenID Connect and creating a bridge between existing infrastructure and emerging infrastructure to start to show the benefits of allowing a customer, a patient, a student to be free and independent, but also by coming into an ecosystem, how they can actually create value and actually result in B2B value. So I think for me, what's been really interesting is really the evolution and how the language has helped set shape the technology, and as a result of that, how it's helped create some of the clarity that I think Clea talked about earlier on.
Great. Katrina, are you finished?
Yeah, sorry.
Great, just making sure. Okay, great. Looks like we had a tentative speaker not come through, but someone was willing to step up and give their perspective in their place. And if you have any other perspectives that you think the community should hear about, feel free to email admins@w3c-ccg.org, and the chairs will evaluate. So our speaker is Nathan from Learning Economy. Is Nathan around?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yep. So Nathan, we will thank you for stepping in at the last minute, and we will recognize you for 5 minutes. Please give a brief intro and your answer to what's in a wallet.
Great. Yeah, no, thanks for finding time. Nathan Stanny with the Learning Economy Foundation. We're just a nonprofit sort of helping build digital infrastructure for education in the 21st century. And we've been collaborating with government policymakers, sort of running pilots and critical to all of that, in line with what sort of being called this learner-centered architecture is this digital wallet enabling true ownership of education credentials. So this is sort of good timing. We sort of, out of that, sort of birthed this idea called this initiative called the Open Wallet Architecture, which is an open source digital wallet being designed and built in accordance with sort of major standards and maintained by us in partnership with the Digital Credential Consortium. We're sort of in the beginning, the initial phases of all of this, defining needs, framing the wallet, auditing the ecosystem, coming up with core tenants. And like you mentioned, the short notice, what I'll do is share just a doc that we've been using internally to sort of guide those discussions. I've pasted in IRC. So what's a wallet? So at a very high level to start out, you know, to us, a wallet is an abstraction which represents sort of everything that is considered important enough to someone or something to be stored in it. It's quite vague, but importantly makes the point that a digital wallet should focus its efforts on how digital data is stored, not necessarily what. So we sort of have the mindset that there shouldn't be technical limitations on what's stored, instead defining good standards to allow people to add to it. So as much as possible, we want to sort of leverage the existing ecosystem, you know, from the collective knowledge to sort of current existing solutions and requirements, so that we're not sort of precluding any of those things. Like I mentioned, we sort of want to define how digital data is stored, not necessarily what. We're loosely calling all these different sort of requirements or use cases of a wallet domains. So we want to sort of, and I'm just parsing through this quickly. You can read that on your own time, but I'm sort of in what is OWA. We want to do all of that. We want to ensure that the value of the wallet appreciates over time. And so we see tremendous value in supporting approved standards to be, as the previous speaker just mentioned, as interoperable and portable as possible. So beyond that, which that's where the discussions have sort of been, we want to sort of build on top of that and do that through, you know, through setting standards that enable sort of more mass adoption from the customer standpoint, looking backwards and backwards. And from that standpoint, you know, we see the wallet as being application and hardware agnostic, so defining this sort of clear interface between those two things. It's not tied to any user experience. And also, and maybe this is perhaps counter to some SSI purists, but rather than imagining a wallet existing in one place, we want to, as best as possible, imagine it existing sort of everywhere at once, supporting remote storage, you know, the potentiality for wallet hierarchies, and doing that sort of while balancing the prioritization of offline use cases. Underneath that, there's just this sort of architecture that we've been using to guide discussions. It's certainly in agreement with most everything we've seen through these presenters today and last week. You know, we're trying to sort of emphasize a couple of things that maybe weren't emphasized before. One, like I mentioned, the wallet isn't tied to an application. So the separation, which allows apps to sort of view into this shared wallet, but that way the, you know, the customer is dealing with one wallet, not what they would or wouldn't be aware of being multiple. The wallet itself does not define data boundaries. It sort of supports this pluggability and modularity. That sort of like pluggable functional components that fit the needs for all of these different domain use cases, whether that be with local storage, remote storage, et cetera. I'll skim through specifically for us the VC handler since we're focused on education verifiable credentials. Lastly, I'll just end with this. You know, we've run this feature analysis, an audit of sort of the existing ecosystem from the Hyperledger space to the universal wallet, all of it being extremely useful. We're doing against a feature set that we sort of see is needed right now. And I just want to encourage anyone in this space that wants to help out with this initiative to reach out to one of us. I'll paste my email in chat, but we're trying to be as sort of open as inclusive as possible so we can sort of synthesize all of these different efforts. I think that'd be most useful for everyone on this call as we're sort of seeing there certainly isolated disparate groups. So that is it.
Thank you for your contribution. Okay, great. We don't have too much time left, but we are going to move to the Q&A section. And in interest of time, we're going to keep things to 30 seconds for answers and responses. And we're going to go off the queue, which starts with Christopher Allen. And Christopher, you'll have 30 seconds, and then up to two of the people who spoke today would have 30 seconds to queue and answer or comment, and then we'll move on to the next question. So Christopher, you have the floor for 30 seconds.
Yeah, one lens focus direction, I'm not sure what the right word is, that seems to be missing from all of our models is one from a legal perspective. I'll share this thing. This is a bill that I helped propose in Wyoming to protect your private keys, because one of the things that I feel like there's an assumption of is that they're yours, they're private. you know, they can't be compelled from you. So I would like to ask the different wallet architecture people, have anybody looked at where the line is of, oh, this is yours, and then legally, where is it? Well, it's also partially somebody else's or completely somebody else's or whatever. So I know in my own perspective, it stops being a wallet when somebody else can pull from it. So that's it.
Got it. Any response to that? Okay, so Daniel Hartman decided to respond, and we will acknowledge you for 30 seconds now.
I just wanted to say that I think that's fascinating and important, and one of the reasons why where you put the presentations, verifiable presentations that you receive from others is interesting, because in receiving those presentations, you may be receiving some kind of legal or at least moral a responsibility to safeguard the data, and safeguarding the data has interesting legal entanglements possibly. So I agree.
Thank you for the answer. We now recognize Adrian Gerber.
So
I want to say that I ascribe to closest to Daniel Hardman's and Christopher Allen's presentation, and would offer that we've been lax in the conversation about what's an agent and what's a wallet since the beginning, you know, 4 years ago. And my suggestion or a definition of a wallet is what can't be done by an agent. In other words, specifically, non-repudiation tied to biometrics and something that's useful offline. You know, everything else, as far as I can tell, can be done by something that's online in various ways. Thank you.
We welcome any responses to that from any of the speakers today. But if not, so feel free to cue yourself if you do have a response to that. Otherwise, we recognize Manu.
Yeah, I just wanted to highlight a comment that Neil John made earlier. It would be great if we could curate all of these presentations. Everyone's come into this with a really great perspective on what a wallet is, and my expectation is a next step would be trying to drive towards consensus in the community around what these things are, and being able to link to these presentations would be super helpful from the landing page of the CG. That's it.
Great. And then I'll cue myself just to respect the system and then acknowledge myself. So effectively, I just opened a GitHub issue towards exactly this. That sounds like a wonderful idea. And if anyone on this call or you know anyone who wants to contribute to this synthesis, feel free to drop a note in that GitHub issue, and we'll ensure that you're involved. Great. Are there any? Well, the queue is empty. If anyone has anything else to say, feel free to add yourself, and you will have 30 seconds. R. Grant, we recognize you for 30 seconds.
Thank you for all these presentations. I think all I'd like to say is that what I want from a wallet standard is a way to understand whether my wallet successfully accepts all the things that it needs to accept and can successfully generate all the things that your wallet may need to accept so that we can complete our whatever our thing is. That's all.
Okay. Thank you. Jonathan Holt.
I think I suppose also there's a slight difference between what is my wallet that I use versus what is a commercial wallet that is being vendored.
Okay, great. It is now 1, and we have reached time. Thank you so much for our great speakers, and then see you all next week.